Number 181966, United States v. Mario Rafael Castillo.
Good morning, Ms. Byrne.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Alejandra Byrne Lopez, on behalf of Mario Rafael Castillo, I'd like to reserve 1 minute for rebuttal, if I may.
Yes, you may.
Thank you. Sometimes the facts of a case are so disturbing and emotionally charged that they elicit an aggressive response by the sentencing judge, resulting in an excessively harsh sentence. It is precisely when cases are disturbing and emotionally charged that it is most important to follow the rules in order to ensure the proper administration of justice. The court here arrived at its harsh sentence by improperly applying a cross-reference, which almost quadrupled the applicable guideline sentencing range in the case. This was procedural error and requires remand. Mr. Castillo pled guilty to a single count of abusive sexual contact. The guideline provision applicable to that charge contains a cross-reference provision which provides that if the offense involved criminal sexual abuse or attempt to commit criminal sexual abuse as defined under a particular statute, apply another guideline, 2A3.1, which is a guideline which corresponds to much more egregious conduct.
Counsel, excuse me.
Yes.
The government's theory must be that the offense of conviction, which seems to be the key word of the cross-reference, that the offense of conviction involved some relevant conduct which permits the application of the cross-reference. What is your understanding of the relevant conduct that the government is relying upon to justify the application of the cross-reference?
Well, in order to put that in the proper context, if you follow the guideline structure, there are only a couple of ways to get to the cross-reference, right? It's either because the actual offense of conviction, the actual conduct of conviction involved an aggravated sexual abuse or an attempt to commit aggravated sexual abuse, or because some other separate conduct, which fits the definition of relevant conduct under the guidelines, can be considered relevant conduct.
They seem to think that the conduct that was the subject of the count, the touching of the child's thigh, that was actually an attempt to do something even worse, because he had in fact done something worse with the other child who was the subject of the count that was dismissed. Is that your understanding of their theory?
My understanding of their theory is that they kind of end up falling back on that, but really the focus of the discussions was that other separate conduct was an attempt. And that conduct,
well, how can that other separate conduct be part of the offense of conviction? Maybe that's your point.
That is my point. That is exactly my point. They had to have focused exactly on the conduct of the offense, and neither in the arguments and the discussions below really focused on other conduct which cannot be considered relevant conduct under the relevant conduct guidelines. The brief, I'd like to point out, in footnote 10, concedes that one of the usual courses for considering other conduct as relevant conduct, which is conduct which is in the same course of conduct or common scheme or plan, does not apply. That provision of the relevant conduct guidelines doesn't apply in this case because it's specifically excluded from that application. That provision of the relevant conduct guideline refers to specific offenses which can be grouped under a separate guideline, and these offenses involved in this case cannot be grouped. And so other conduct, which is part of a common scheme or plan.
Well, there are some types of offenses that involve continuing conduct, but this is not such an offense.
That's correct. This is a single-time offense. This is a single occurrence offense or a single moment in time offense. This is not a continuing offense.
Why is it the touching sexual conduct?
Well, in this case, in the sexual conduct that
question.
It's the sexual contact. I'm sorry, maybe I misunderstood the question.
Why isn't the touching of the thigh of the FBI in this case, under the circumstances of this case, considers sexual conduct.
It is considered sexual conduct.
Why
but it's not
enough?
Aggravated sexual. It's not aggravated sexual conduct.
It isn't.
It isn't.
Isn't the age of the victim of some relevance?
Both of the offenses that were charged.
Please answer my question. Why not?
It's not because there is a distinction made between sexual contact and a sexual act. Sexual act, as defined in the statute, includes egregious behavior such as intercourse, anal or genital penetration, oral contact with the genitalia, or touching of genitalia not through clothing. So that specific conduct is the conduct that you would have to have shown was involved in
but
the
is it attempt?
I'm sorry?
Is attempt to do those acts?
Yes.
So why isn't this an attempt?
Because we don't have any actual facts in the record that would show us in the circumstances of that conduct. What sparse description we have of that event does not show us that there was an attempt, not by a fair preponderance of the evidence, which is the burden of proof that the government would have to meet.
But counsel, didn't the sort of agreed upon statement of facts includes the conduct involving the other child? Now that charge was dismissed. That's the one that would have involved a 30-year mandatory minimum sentence. That charge was dismissed, but he does acknowledge, does he not, that conduct that was that underlies that dismissed count. Isn't that true?
Yes.
And isn't the government perhaps arguing that, given his admission of what he did there, which is very similar to what he did in this other count, that it's appropriate to infer that when he was touching the child's thigh, that was the beginning of an attempt to commit the more serious act that he committed with the other child?
That would be the more direct line to that. That argument would be the more direct line. The problem is that if what they want to do is export the intent from that offense conduct, right, from that the count one conduct into the count two conduct.
I don't understand what's wrong with that, since he admitted to it in the statement of facts.
He did admit to it, but we can't assume that at any point in time ever, because he did that conduct once, that means that he was always attempting to commit that conduct.
Well, I understand because you want it to be propensity, but given the unique facts of this case, they involve two sisters in the same environment within the same time frame referred to in the indictment. I don't understand why, based upon the particular facts of this case, that would be impermissible.
Because the time frame involved in the indictment is over the course of 3 years. We don't even know what order these events actually occurred in. We don't have any proximity of time. There's not a description of the event that gives us any context. There's only a cursory description of the circumstances. There's no information about the time and date, whether the defendant said anything during that event, whether something in particular occurred before, whether there was even a reasonable opportunity for the conduct to escalate, whether, you know, we don't have facts. I mean, in order to show by a preponderance of the evidence that there was specific intent to commit a very specific act. These acts that are described in the statute are very specific. You need something which is tied into the circumstances, not just a general propensity or willingness to, that we know that the defendant eventually or at some point was willing to get to that point. We have to show that conduct at that time, we can say that his state of mind was such that we know what he was intending to do. And because of the nature of the sparse information that we have, we can't arrive at that conclusion. Your Honor, I see my time is up, but I'd be happy to address any other concerns.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Perez?
Good morning again, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Antonio Perez on behalf of the United States. It was not unreasonable in this case for the district court to impose a low-end guideline sentence for a granddaughter, for a grandfather that subjected his two granddaughters to a series of sexual abuse when he was caring for them while his son was stationed abroad in Germany. Let me start by trying to clarify what the district court did in this case. He was convicted of abusive sexual contact with regard to granddaughter number two. The cross-reference permits the court to apply the cross-reference if the offense involves of aggravated sexual abuse. That word offense in the guidelines is defined as the offense of conviction and all relevant conduct. So neither the court nor the government is limited to just the offense of conviction.
I want you to tell me if this is the operative definition of relevant conduct here. This is section 1B1.3, defines relevant conduct as follows: shall be determined on the basis of all acts and omissions committed, aided, abetted, counseled, commanded, induced, procured, or willfully caused by the defendant that occurred during the commission of the offense of conviction, in preparation for that offense, or in the course of attempting to avoid detection or responsibility for that offense. Is that the relevant definition here?
That is correct, Your Honor. That is correct.
Okay, so if that is the relevant definition, what specifically are you arguing with respect to the claim that he was engaged in an attempt to commit a more serious offense? Is that your theory?
Yes, we are arguing that the conduct in question that constituted an attempted aggravated sexual abuse happened during the commission of the offense.
So that attempt occurred during the commission of the offense of conviction? Is that your argument?
Correct. And what happened here was that in Mr. Castillo's joint statement of facts, he admitted to, on one occasion, touching the inner thigh of the granddaughter number two, but in addition to that, to trying to pull down her pants.
When did that occur? That other incident, with the incident was the subject of the charge that was dismissed. When did that occur? We're talking about a 3-year time frame here. When did that other incident occur?
It's unclear. It occurred during that, but what is clear is that it occurred during the time frame that
a 3-year time frame.
Yes, during the time frame that the granddaughters were with their grandfather in Germany while his son was stationed abroad there. Mr. Castillo was in charge of taking care of them, and so it's not just the temporal aspect, but courts have said that you look to all of the circumstances, such as temporal overlap, spatial overlap, and to see if incidents are similar to determine if they constitute relevant conduct specifically under that definition.
Counsel, opposing counsels, I thought she said you're not actually relying on this attempt theory. Was that a misstatement? Are you relying on that attempt theory?
We are, Your Honor.
Is that the theory that the court adopted?
That theory that the court adopted and what we're relying on is that when he tried to pull down the pants of granddaughter number two, which was the same granddaughter as to the offense of conviction, that constituted an attempt to commit aggravated sexual abuse, because you have to look at it in the context of everything that he admitted to during this time period when they were in Germany. As to granddaughter number one...
Well, then, on that theory, you could have charged him, could you not, with aggravated sexual abuse, as you did with respect to the first child. You could have charged that, correct?
That is correct, but even if the government could have charged it, the relevant conduct guidelines allow the government to rely on conduct that's uncharged or that was specifically dismissed in applying relevant conduct under the guidelines and specifically under cross-references. And in fact, the guidelines speak about that. That is the point of relevant conduct. It is to take into account the actual conduct of the offense, not just the conduct that was the object of the count of conviction. And specifically as to this cross-reference, it was passed because the commission found that a lot of conduct that was being charged and convicted under abusive sexual contact actually involved things that would constitute aggravated sexual abuse. And so the purpose of the cross-reference is to get to the defendant's actual conduct. In addition, he did benefit greatly from the plea agreement because that count one, which was dismissed, carried a 30-year mandatory minimum. So although the cross-reference was applied, it's not that he didn't get any benefit from dismissing that more severe charge. Another thing that I wanted to point out is that this argument that the government can't rely on this attempted aggravated sexual abuse because it wasn't relevant conduct was never made below. Was never made below by Mr. Castillo, so it should be subject to a plain error standard. And
I don't understand. I mean, they seem to argue vociferously that the cross-reference should not apply. I mean, that's argued repeatedly. So I don't understand how you can say that they're not now able to make the arguments that they're making.
They argue that the cross-reference should not be applied, but under another theory. They argued below that the cross-reference should not be applied because there was insufficient evidence that in trying to pull down granddaughter number two's pants, that his intent was to commit a sexual act.
Well, that's what's being argued right now.
Well, that's one of their arguments, but the first argument is that relevant conduct? Is the pulling down of the pants relevant conduct? And they never made that argument below. But regardless of whether we apply the plain error standard or not, we have a situation where we have the same victim as the count of conviction under similar circumstances in this while Mr. Castillo is taking care of his granddaughters in Germany and conduct that is of a similar sexual nature. And under the relevant conduct guidelines, that can be considered. And when you look at that in the context of what of all of the acts that he admitted, the one time that he successfully pulled down one of the granddaughter's pants, he licked her genitalia, which is a sexual act. And so the district court could conclude, and it was plausible for the district court to conclude, and that's all that we have to do even under a clear error standard, because it's a factual finding of the district court, that's what he intended to do in trying to pull down granddaughter number two's pants. And so there was sufficient evidence to show his intent to commit an attempted aggravated sexual abuse and apply the cross-reference there. In addition, just a quick point on substantive reasonableness of the sentence. This was a low-end guideline sentence where the district court heard a lot of strong evidence from even the victims. There were two letters read from the victims where they talked about how they couldn't sleep at night and how they had a lot of anger and that Mr. Castillo should be punished because of what they did to them. And so given the severity of the offense, it was definitely substantively reasonable to give him a low-end guideline sentence. And again, he benefited from count one being dismissed, which is the one that carried the 30-year mandatory minimum. If there are no further questions from the panel at this point, we ask that the court affirm the district court sentence. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me have a minute.
Yes, I'd just like to make a few points very briefly. Number one, all of the cases that I've been able to review and that I've found applying this cross-reference deal with conduct that occurred during the same event or incident, and finding that if that conduct was more egregious and involved a sexual act, then the cross-reference applies. I have seen no cases, and I didn't see any in the government's brief, that apply the cross-reference in the way that they are proposing to use another separate incident, which is an attempt, as the basis for the application of the cross-reference. As to the...
No, they're saying that using that other incident, that this, at the same time that the sexual contact was taking place, it was really the beginning, it was an attempt to commit the more serious offense, exactly like the one that was committed on the other child. Isn't that what they're saying?
I see my time is up. I'd like to address your Honor's concern, if I may. The bulk of their brief goes into arguing that separate incident is relevant conduct, or it's part of the conduct of the count two conduct. That is what the bulk of their argument is. They also do rely on trying to create or basing themselves on the theory that the actual touching of the inner thigh conduct also constituted an attempt. But really, the argument below and the finding of the court below was that separate incident was an attempt and not the conduct of the conviction. Page 12 of the addendum, that's the finding that the finding that the court made with that separate attempt.
Very quick. So yes. You're saying they argued that the relevant conduct was not the attempt below. Their argument was that other incident was itself relevant conduct that could be taken into consideration?
They argued that the pulling down of female minor 2's pants was what constituted an attempt. But there was never any argument that was part of the count of the conviction, that was part of the conduct under the count of conviction. The conduct and the count of conviction is the touching of the inner thigh.
Well, which of those two theories did the court adopt in its...
The first. The court states, Mr. Castillo attempted to pull down the pants of one of the granddaughters mentioned in the count of conviction, and the court finds that it can reasonably be inferred that his intention was to commit a sexual act. So it's referring to that other separate event. And the obvious choice for the court to make was to make a beeline directly to the conduct of the offense of conviction, and the court refrained from making a finding that was an attempt. It did not make that finding. With respect to plain error, I would just like to point out...
I'm sorry, your time is up.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.